Fine dining, everyone. This is Professor Amon-Ra, Professor Emeritus, California State University of Long Beach, former professor at Compton Community College, where I taught ethnic studies, psychology, and also ethnic African-American history. I want to welcome you to the Conscious Corner show. The name was coined by Joe Hembrick with my co-host, longtime teacher, administrator, coach for Compton Unified School District, Glenwood Unified School District, coached at Compton College as well as the Southwest. And we just honored him, and he's a historian that has did deep study into the history of African people and their liberation struggle. So we welcome you to the Conscious Corner. This is a podcast that speaks truth to the people. When we go Zoom, we look in the face of the people that's on the Zoom with us, and they look like they're looking for the truth. And we want to let them know that they have found the truth, because here they ain't going to get nothing but the truth, instead of them bald-faced lies and maulers of the truth called American politicians, presidents, and even Supreme Court justice. They lie just like they breathe. So we're going to get started with this classic show. I want to welcome Brother Jesse Stasher, star basketball player at Centennial and in college, and a former just good brother that I played ball with, and we won Coast League together. And also Gene Mays, one of the greatest golfers I ever played with. And then, smooth as silk. And then we want to get started. And Linda Shorter. Linda Shorter is a longtime activist. Her brother is one of the leaders of the reparation movement, who just gave a national conference on reparations. And they're going to be on the show to talk about that. So we welcome Linda out of Florida. And we welcome each and every one of you. Our guest tonight is a close friend and a colleague from the standpoint I worked at Glenwood High when he was coaching baseball. And at the same time, he's an alumni of Centennial High School, college graduate, went on to teach at Compton High and Glenwood Unified, as well as he coached at Compton College. He's played pro baseball, and he's written a classic book that I really enjoy, called The Compton Baseball Lab, where by way of his biography, he discussed the beautiful places and influences from the community of Compton. Many people think only gangs and rappers come out of Compton, but Dale has researched and shown professional athletes and others that have demonstrated Black excellence to come out during the 60s, during the turmoil years. And we really thank him for taking time to share with us about his book. And we'll have an opportunity to discuss questions with him as he go on and give us the insight of why he wrote this book and what are the main things he wants us to get from the book. So Dale, go ahead.
Okay, first of all, I want to thank the Community Ed Network for allowing me to come on this evening. It's truly an honor and a pleasure. And I just want to start off by saying that I'm very, very proud to have grown up in Compton. And I know, like what Professor has said, and I know like Jesse and many of us know, that Compton has always got a bad rap of being so negative. But once again, we've had so many, many great people, famous and not so famous, but great parents, great grandparents, great forefathers who were before us and allowed us to stand on their shoulders, so to speak. First of all, I just want to say that what inspired me to write this book was that I was truly enjoyed my childhood growing up. And this was based upon my love for this right here, baseball. And I really, really love it. During that time, I incurred having a lot of friends in my youth. Elementary school, I went to which is called McNair now, elementary. I went to Willowbrook Junior High School, I went to Centennial High School. I was fortunate enough to get a baseball scholarship to Pepperdine. And my sophomore year at Pepperdine, I was drafted by the Minnesota Twins in professional baseball. My junior year, I was drafted by the Baltimore Orioles. And my senior year, I was Angels' first round draft pick. I graduated from Pepperdine in 1968, also got my master's from Pepperdine in 78. Played 3 years of professional baseball. I played A ball, double A, triple A spring training, which is one step from the big leagues. And I tore my medial meniscus and ligament. And I know all of us are athletes, and we know what happens, that's part of the game. We just hope that we don't get injured. But anyway, I got released, and in my book, as I mentioned, even if I made it in Major League Baseball or not, I always wanted to come back into my community and help my people. And I want to help out everybody, but more specifically, I want to help out my people, people that look like me. So anyway, I did that, and I taught high school for over 31 years, and I coached, and, anyway, so I've been retired since 2003. But basically, from there, from Pepperdine, let me go back there. Once again, like I said, I played professional baseball, taught high school, and I got a chance to do coaching and scouting. What really sold me, 1 year, Compton Little League, we had a chance to go to the Los Angeles Memorial Coliseum. And that was where the Dodgers played baseball before they built Dodger Stadium. And anyway, what really sold me on baseball was when you walk through that long tunnel, and most of you guys have been to the Coliseum, for more specifically for football games. And once I walked through that long, dark tunnel, and when I came in through the other side, it seemed like it was a whole new different world. The grass was green. You smell the peanuts, the popcorn, and I just love the colors of the baseball team. I watched them take infield and outfield, and I heard the announcer, and right then and there, that's what sold me that I wanted to play Major League Baseball. Okay. So anyway, if you guys have any questions you'd like to ask me, I won't take up all the time. I know you guys are extremely busy. I just want to give you just like a little background and let you know where I came from, and I'm proud of Compton. Extremely proud.
All right. Well, let me just start off, Dale. First, tell us about the experience in Watts. You went to 112th Street Elementary, and what was that like? You always talked about how you and your grandmother picked you up. She had one of the first record stores in black record stores, and you used to love that pie she used to buy you, and then she denied you pie once, and you cried like a baby. But get into the dynamics, first of all, because I lived on 101st and Central. You lived on 112, I think, near Hooper.
Hooper, yeah, that's right, 112th and Hooper.
Yeah, and so that's right down the street from Real Rogers Park. Did you play at Real Rogers Park?
No, I didn't. But let me start off, as I said, I was born in L.A., and I went to 112th Street Elementary, kindergarten, first, second, and about the third grade. So anyway, most of you guys have probably read this anyway. I had an incident where I had a bad habit, always talking, and I was always have to, like in the old days when your parents, the teacher would say, okay, you got to stay after class and you got to write 100 standards. I would not talk in class, So I kind of straightened up for a while, but after every time my grandmother would pick me up, I would go to the store because I wanted to get one of those Boston cream pies or whatever. And back then, it was just 5 cents, for some Hostess cupcakes or whatever. So anyway, I was a sugar addict. So anyway, I just loved that. And so anyway, one day, my mother told my grandmother, hey, if you have to stay after school, let me know because she was going to beat me, not abuse me, but, you know, give me a good spanking. And okay, during that time, my mother, she was a teacher and later became a master teacher. So that's why she could not leave early. So my grandmother owned a music shop in Watts. So she would close up early and come pick me up, then we come back. So anyway, basically that's about all that story is. I never played at Will Rogers Park except at one time when my dad took me, you know, when I had a baseball glove, we went up there and we played all day. And hey, that was so much fun.
All right. And the other thing is, in your, the people that wrote in the preface of the book, you had Reggie Smith, I think that was?
Yes.
And then you had Leonard Randall,
mm-hmm.
and you had Bill Ritchie.
Yes.
And go over their comments because they were very unique. And when they talked about Cressy Park being the mecca of black baseball or youth baseball or the mecca of baseball in the community. And yeah, you talked about Connie Mack a little bit in the book.
Yes, I did. Okay, I can't remember per se what they said, but anyway, Reggie said that Cressy Park was the mecca for black baseball players. It was very, very exciting. And Reggie also said that he was really thankful for bringing back the memories as far as all the childhood activities we had up there, like in Compton Little League, in junior high and high school at Centennial. Ted Williams, who was a very famous football coach, Ted was really thankful to us because he mentioned so many things about growing up in Compton once again, playing baseball like with Roy White, with David Kelly, you know, so many guys, Wayne Simpson. Lenny Randall mentioned how he was growing up. Excuse me, back up. Lenny and I lived about 14 houses from each other on a street called Elva. I lived on 1912 North Elva Avenue. You guys probably know where that is. Mm. But anyway, Lenny said he mentioned how he saw so many football players, basketball, and baseball players would come up to Cressy Park, not just for baseball, but for basketball also. And he watched those guys grow up and go on to mature, you know, like to college ball and also play in the NFL and or Major League Baseball.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you also mentioned, you know, your experiences coming up through the middle school when you got to Centennial.
Mm-hmm.
I hadn't gotten to anything where you talked about Shimo and your experience with Coach Shimo, baseball coach. Because, you know, he did a lot of things that some people criticize.
Yeah.
With regard to spitting tobacco on their shirt.
Yeah, that's it.
And all of that. But plus, some people thought he made a lot of racial, what would be called racial slurs.
Oh, yeah, not really, it would.
Yeah. So tell us about, because you mentioned a lot of the players that came out of Centennial. I remember when we met at Bobby Watkins' house.
Mm-hmm.
For that, and you were doing research.
Yes.
At that time, and you was asking me about research about black baseball players mm-hmm. and the history of the various teams. So mm-hmm. why don't you cover a little bit about that?
Okay, well, first of all, let me go back to our high school days. I know Jesse remembers this. Jesse, hey, if you want to comment, and also Professor, if you'd like to comment too, and also Mr. Mays. But there is a chapter in there where I mentioned about it, something called a Board of Education. And yeah. I don't know if you got it, that was that big paddle they had, you know, with those holes in it that would suck the meat in, you know, as they swatted you. Mm-hmm. And I remember Mr. Shimo, like you said, he would spit on your hand sometime, you know, call you chicken, you know what, and stuff like that. In fact, there was one passage, I remember when the football players, if they made a mistake, there was one guy who fumbled the ball. And all the following week, and I have this mentioned in the book, the guy had to wear a yellow vest. And Mr. Wade and Mr. Shimo would call him yellow. You know, in other words, he didn't have any guts or anything like that. But, of course, those things you can't do right now because of lawsuits and bullying or whatever, stuff like that. But it was a very unique era. And once again, Mr. Wade, Mr. Shimo, they were highly respected because, I'm sorry, you didn't call them Coach Wade or Coach Shimo. You called them, you know, Mr. Wade, Mr. Shimo, because they were highly respected. And they handled all of the discipline problems at Centennial High School, you know. And they ran a tight ship. And I really, really appreciated it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So what about some of the players that came out that you make note of that emerged out of that Centennial and the Compton area that you noted in the book, in chapter 14, you talked about, page 42, mm-hmm. you mentioned a lot of players and athletes, both in, you know, you not only started in baseball, you started in basketball. Because when I came as a sophomore, you was one of the leading scorers and one of the leading rebounders for the team at that time. And you mentioned that, but you mentioned a lot of players that came out mm-hmm. ahead of you and after you. So why don't you discuss some of them?
Okay, at Centennial High School, once again, in basketball, and I mentioned this in the book, the only reason why I went out for basketball was to stay in shape for baseball. You know, I really didn't like basketball, but I liked it because I loved to play defense. I liked to get rebounds because I was not that big of a scorer. Now, Jesse was a good scorer. Professor, you were a darn good scorer. You know, so I just loved to rebound and block shots and start mm-hmm. the fast break. But we had you, we had Jesse, we had
Larry Hughes.
Yeah, Michael Hughes. We had Robert Charles.
And Herndon.
Yeah, Herndon, all those guys, you know. Yeah. And I know for baseball, we had Reggie Smith. He played Major League Baseball. Don Wilson was another guy that played on our high school team. He made it with the Astros. He was a pitcher. We had Lee Robinson. He played professional baseball. Bill Ritchie, Benoit Raymer. I mean, it just goes on. I mean, Lenny Randle, Wayne Simpson, Mickey Curitan was another outstanding football player. I mean, it just goes on and on. I mean, and also now if you jump to Compton, okay, we had Bobby Watkins. You had, Harvey Dillon. We had a guy named Jacobs that was real good.
Mike Jacobs.
Larry Hollyfield, he went to UCLA. You know, you remember him? Dwight Taylor was another good basketball player. Sadly, you know, he got killed. Yeah. Marvin Herndon, and then you go to Dominguez. Heck, you've got Ubi Brooks. He played Major League Baseball. You got Ricky Peters. It just goes on and on, you know. Eugene Mays played baseball at the Centennial also. We just had some good athletes, great athletes throughout. And also, there was bragging rights. And, you know, we played in the tough league, which is the Coast League. You know, we had Paramount, Warren, you know, schools like that. But there was always bragging rights between Centennial, Dominguez, and Compton. You know that. And to me, during that time, Centennial had the edge for, like, football. You know, basketball was Compton, more or less. You know, Linwood was good for baseball. But it was a good league, a lot of fun.
Yeah, and they had the Compton Relays. And track was what you would call one of the major sports during that era.
Yes.
You know, people would go to track meets. You know, they watch them on TV now and it's different unless it's the Olympics. Yeah. But track, I remember we had a lot of excellent speedsters and hurdlers and things of that nature. But you mentioned something else in your book. You talked a little bit about racism.
Yeah.
You mentioned it. So why don't you go over some of those experiences or knowledge that you have of it with regards to the challenges Black athletes had or are you experiencing racism?
Okay, first of all, and I mentioned this in my book, what I went through was nothing compared to what my ancestor went through. I mean, it's there. You know, you still got traces of it. But once again, I pay homage and respect to those men, women, and children who sacrificed their lives, sacrificed their betterment for us. You know, so I don't ever want to forget them. Mm-hmm. But going back to the question you asked me, there was one incident when I was playing in the Texas League. back in 1970. That was Double A. That was in El Paso, Texas. And we were in Shreveport, Louisiana. And I mentioned this in the book. During that time, you know, most ball clubs, when you played minor league baseball, you know, you had a bus that would take you, you know, from your hotel to the ballpark and back. Well, down in Shreveport, they didn't have any buses per se. So our manager, Dale Rice, he would get taxi cabs and pick us up, take us, you know, from the hotel to the ballpark and vice versa. So anyway, one game we had, we were riding like three deep. And so I got in the car with two other white guys. Well, I should say white guys, white teammates. Okay. No problem with them. So anyway, there was this, I guess, good old boy. He was a taxi cab driver. And he got in, and the route that we would normally take, they had some kind of black festival going on during that time. So it was extremely crowded. Okay, you follow me where I'm going with this? So what happened, the guy had to take another route. So anyway, I sat behind the cab driver, who was white, and my two teammates, one white guy sat in the front, and then the other guy sat adjacent to me in the back seat. So anyway, this white cab driver says, he says, "Oh, S-H-I-T, it looked like we're going to have to go another route. I'm going to have to go in, right in the middle of Nigger Town." And being from California, well, you know how racism is sort of covert, right? You know, sort of like cloak and dagger. You know, they smile at you and stab you in the back. Down south, you know how it is. Hey, bottom line, hey, that you know what's going on. So anyway, I had a big old chug of beer. You know, we all had beer. You know, it's so goddamn hot down there in Shreveport. So, and Sleepy, the longer I drove, and I mentioned this book, I felt like a so-called stick of dynamite with a long fuse. And the longer I drove, the shorter the goddamn fuse got. You see where I'm going with this? And I just got so upset. I mean, I was boiling. And my teammates, I mentioned this in the book, they said, "Damn, man, take it easy." They told me that they had never seen this look on my face before, because the longer and longer I drove, the more and more steamed up I got. And the guy, the cab driver, looked him in the back, but he didn't say anything else. You know, his eyes got big, because I guess he had forgotten I was back there. But I guess I must have been shooting bullets at him, I guess, with my eyes. So anyway, we finally got to the hotel. And I got out the car, I said, "Hey, man, what's your name?" He said, "Oh, man, I ain't got no name." So I told him a few choice words. I got my book, and I threw the beer on the back of his car, and I went up, Sleepy. I could not go to sleep. I was that upset. Okay, that's one incident. Now, here's another incident. My wife, I should say, my first wife had just had our first child, Erica. She was born in 1970. So they stayed in Compton, you know, while I was playing minor league baseball, because I was still in El Paso. Okay, so I got permission to fly home. And prior to me going home, I talked to some of my buddies, white and black. I said, "Look, man, I just had a big baby." "Oh, that's great." So they said, "Hey, could you guys kind of look for me? Let me know where I can find a place." You know, so I was calling. So I went, got her. We came back. We called on the phone. And as I say, you know, Yogi Bear always say, deja vu, you know, hey, all over again. Okay, so anyway, when we're talking on the phone, hey, everything's cool, right? You get there, "Oh, I'm sorry, but hey, we already rented that out." And see, those are the things that ruin men, women, but especially all of us, men, women, and children as a race. We get so much psychological and emotional damage. That's why a lot of, you know, we got heart disease, all these other conditions. But those are just a couple of incidents. Oh, one more incident in my book. You got time?
Yeah.
Okay. This is when I messed my knee up in spring training. I was in AAA ball, which is one step to the big leagues. I'm playing AAA spring training, 1971. And I heard this up. Anyway, there was a foul ball around home plate, and I was playing first base. Our catcher, you know, was going for a foul ball. I was there, and then all of I was running full speed. He's running full speed. So all of a sudden, he says, I got it. So I tried to pivot to my right and my spice got caught. And that's why I tore my ligament and my cartilage in my left knee. Okay, so let me fast forward. So I'm hobbling around in spring training 2 weeks, still trying to hit, going to therapy. They wouldn't fly me back. Now we're playing in El Centro, California. That's right on the border, close to Mexico. Our farm director would not fly me back from there. So I just got pissed off. I said, look, man, let me ask you something. Why would you fly so-and-so and so-and-so back? Yeah, you know what color they were, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, and not me. What you trying to say? You say you prayed this? I said, God, so-and-so. I said, you said it, I didn't. Mm-hmm. So I'm hobbling around, hitting doubles off the wall, can hardly run. And if you think I'm lying, I got two people in my book that verify this because they saw me in spring training. But anyway, so he finally flew me there, all right, to see Dr. Frank Joel, who was a specialist. Okay, hold up. So anyway, I was told by this surgeon, because he said, hey, Dale, when are you going back to with the Angels? See, the Angels released me while I was still injured, which was illegal. So anyway, I'll leave there, man. I got so many things I can tell you, but I'll let you
answer. That's good. All right. Jesse Thatcher.
Yeah.
You're on mute. Jesse? You're on mute. Take it off mute. Can you take it off mute? It should be right down. Are you on your phone or?
Okay. He's on the phone. Yeah.
He's on your phone.
Yeah, he said he's on the phone.
It should be an error with speaker.
Well, what he could do, tell him to log out and then just come back in and he'll be off mute. Because I don't know how he could do that.
All right. Brother Mays, you have any questions?
Tell him to hang up and come back in.
Just to hang up and come back in. He can hear us.
Okay.
I'd just like to say, you know, I got his book. Dale gave me a call and told me that the book was out, and I went on Amazon and got it and read through the whole thing, and it brought back all kind of old memories there. We used to go way back as far as 1958 at the old El Segundo Park when we first played Little League. Matter of fact, we had the All-Star team. Way back in 58, Reggie Smith and Daryl and Donald Wilson and all those guys. And I just want to let Daryl know I appreciate that book of his. I enjoyed it very much, my man. And I'm just proud of you for what you've done and how you're just bringing back the memories. And I'm not the only one. I've talked to Woody Cox and a few other brothers there. Just reading the book brought back all kind of memories. And we're just proud of you. That's all I can say. Thank you, brother.
Brother,
thank you,
brother man, and thanks for chiming in too. Hey, what about Rasha Key? Okay, brother
Rasha
Key.
Yes, sir.
You said your experience as a student.
Yeah, I played basketball, and I got a little story. Now we were at Davis in 1980, and we dominated the city in sports. So when we arrived on the campus in the fall of 1980 at Compton High, you had Matthew Brooks, which was the best player in our class in the whole city. He played varsity when he came straight to the school. He played for Coach Campbell. I played varsity basketball. I was the best basketball player in my grade. And Joe Kane, professional football player, was another 10th grader that started varsity as a linebacker at Compton High School. So we had a dominating class coming in. And what I recognize about Coach is he was very quiet. He never really said too much. I would see him, and he was just had a very calm demeanor. And I never had any run-ins with him. I didn't have no run-ins with anybody, but I never seen him get upset. And I was talking to my classmate, we call him BB, Matthew Brooks.
Yeah.
And I asked him, I said, did Coach Campbell ever get excited? He said, yeah. He said he used to talk and you know, kind of get excited on the baseball field, but during school and you know, in class time, he just was had a quiet demeanor. I never knew that he was a professional player, never knew he went to Centennial. And when you said, Roz, that he was coming on, I said, I know a Coach Campbell from Compton. And I didn't realize that was him. But so I'm so glad that it was him. And I just appreciate everything you have done and all of the accomplishments. And so I'm enjoying the cast this evening.
Thank you.
One thing about it, when we was in high school, Jesse and Dale and a few other people, they carried their books. You know, I mean, they weren't like me and a lot of the brothers that just came to play sports. You understand? But Dale them and them, they actually had books. You know, they never was around the wild set. Mm-hmm. I can't say that about Maze. You understand?
But don't worry, this interview ain't about Maze. Now I have one more question for all of you guys. Now, Coach Campbell mentioned Herndon twice. He mentioned Marvin Herndon, and then he mentioned another Herndon at Centennial. Was that Herndon related to those Herndons?
I'm not sure. Yeah, because that was 10 years later, you know, after I started teaching in Compton. It could be.
Because I know that family was an exceptional athletic family.
Yeah, Marvin and Melvin. Yeah.
Yeah, exceptional.
The guy we played with was Tyrone Herndon. Brother Hembrick, you worked with at Compton and Inwood, and I'm pretty sure you at the same time Coach Campbell was there. You have any points of perspective? Are you there, Big Joe? Sometimes you have to deal with his dog. Mm-hmm. Linda, are you there? Well, anyway, Coach, I want to go to.
I'm definitely here, listening and learning. I'm right here.
All right. Okay, then. Brother Hembrick, you're off mute now. Brother Hembrick?
Yeah.
Do you have any comments? Then we go back to Jesse.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, okay, good.
Brother Hembrick, you got any comments?
Yeah. You know, baseball, in particular in the Black community, especially in the country, I came up at West Park playing for Bob Davis back in the mid-60s. I don't know where you guys were. He almost went to the Little League World Series out of, I think it was 65, 66. And we had Dick Davis on that team, Gary Ward. We had Kenny Landry on that team, Calvin Moore, and, a bunch of guys. And, you look around in, Little League Park today, doesn't seem like there's a whole lot going on anymore, especially with Black kids. It seemed like they want to play. I don't know if it has anything to do with the expense of, that it costs to play baseball these days. It seemed like there aren't any Black kids out there any longer. Please comment on that for me, please.
Yeah, Dale, did your perspective of why you see less Black kids, or Black American kids playing baseball?
Well, okay, this is my take. I'm sure it's, okay, I don't have the corner marker on this, but I feel like with basketball and football, there's a shorter route to the finish line, so to speak, for the tape.
That's correct.
What I mean by that, in baseball, when if a kid signs out of high school, they have to go through what they call a farm system. Rookie league, A-ball, double-A, triple-A, and then the big league. As an example, with basketball, up until a few years ago, you know, guys could sign right out of high school and go to the NBA. And I think it's just a way, to me, that the society is structured now. Okay, everything is like instant. You know what I mean? Instant this, instant that, microwave. Nobody wants to wait anymore. Everybody wants instant gratification. You know, everybody wants to have success. So many guys say, well, why should I sign out of high school and take me 3 or 4 years to get to the big leagues? You know, I can go directly from high school to the NBA. See what I mean? I think that's one reason. All right. The next reason in basketball, what do you need for basketball? A ball, some tennis shoes, and a hoop. Baseball, like Mr. Hembrick just pointed out, is expensive. A goddamn aluminum bat costs you $200 or $300 now. A glove, $175, $200. See what I mean? Plus, they have the family structure within the people of color. Our families have been spread apart. Drugs, alcohol, gangs, all this stuff has been perpetuated to destroy the Black family. If you look at the better areas, you have a family, you have support. So those, to me, those are just a couple of reasons. And also, to me, the family is the root system to society. You destroy the family, you guys know that what happens. Children don't have anybody to look up to, father figures. See what I mean? So to me, the family is the strongest unit. And when you destroy that unit, you destroy society, you destroy the family. Parents, I think the key, like I mentioned in my book, parents should spend quality time with their families, especially the young men. And parents are the key. They have to show interest and they have to get involved. Okay, that's my little small take.
Any other questions, Big Joe? Okay, Jesse, you got any comment?
Not a whole lot, but I would like to, you know, I really appreciate Dale. You know, I haven't had a chance to say too much about it, but I'm just so proud of him that he has taken both the time and the fortitude just to put something together like this to show us all, you know, what we've been doing. Because we've been talking about a whole lot of things that brings up a whole lot of memories for me. Because it's like even my relationship with Dale really kind of started with my sister. So Dale's my brother-in-law. And so I know, you know, he's a family member, you know, for me. And even though I've not seen many people since I left Centennial, I know you've made that comment a lot of people. I've not seen many people. Because I guess I went off and did something else. But one of these days I'll get a chance to talk about that too as well with you. And maybe perhaps I'll take the time to tell you a little bit about corporate America and what we did in corporate America where I spent most of my time for Black people.
We will have you on to do that, Jesse. Yeah. I just wanted to say this. You have anything else to let me just say this, Dale. Going back to the question about youth participation. From about 1959 all the way up to, I'd say, somewhere around 70, baseball was the most glamorous sport. Mm-hmm. you know, when Ben Skelly and the Dodgers came, basketball was not as popular as baseball was. Even though the Lakers had Dick Barnett and a few, Elgin Baylor, but we played softball in the streets, pitching underhand. We played catch in the streets. There were playgrounds in which we played baseball or sports similar to baseball, like kickball and softball. Then there was a change because in those days, most youth, baseball was one of the hardest sports and still is because the batter got to hit 100 mile an hour fastball with a bat and try to get a solid hit. And that's not easy. Second, you don't have the coaches. Most of the baseball fields been turned into soccer fields.
Right.
With immigration, even though a lot of the people from the Caribbean and islands and things, isn't it, they're black. They play. Mm-hmm. If they kid is not as hungry as we were, and they did, they have more diet, more different directions in which they can see themselves getting out of the hood from basketball, football, singing, rapping, and even organized crime. We had a few gangsters when we was coming that was into hustling, but cocaine was an expensive drug when we was coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And very few people got into that. We were not expensive, but people didn't like the smoking. So you didn't have the version that you have now where the main street drugs are so cheap. Chemical made drugs that's made here. You know, we had Red Devils, F40s and Bennies and all of that. But the stuff that they got now in pill form kills you. When we was coming up, it was mainly heroin, you OD. Now they're OD'ing off of just pills. So there was a shift in the mindset of young people when rap came in. Mm-hmm. And you got so many youngsters that are focusing on that. But going back to our age coming up, being centennial, you had black teachers like Mr. Freeman, Mr. Redford, Mr. Wade, Miss Jones, a number of other black teachers out the South that really instilled a sense of expectation in the students. Mm-hmm. Our dress is different. When we went to school, we had to be clean. The students will talk about you. Mm-hmm. You didn't come to school in sweats and shorts and all of that. So there's a different atmosphere that diverted people from baseball. Now, Lenny Randle, yourself, they built the stadium over at Compton College. But mostly people from outside the community use it.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the same time, they tried to bring it back with the Dodgers, fixing up now Gonzales Park. There used to be Cressy Park, where we used to go to the Dollar Hop with Hunter Hancock. I didn't know the gym was so small. When I was in junior high, we'd go up there and pay that dollar. It looked like 1,000 people was in there. But it's really a small place. But at that same time, there's a shift. Now, when you left and went to Pepperdine, Pepperdine's about, at that time, close to maybe 3 to 5% black, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
But it was on Vermont, in the heart of the black community.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about that experience.
Well, What I noticed that when I went to Centennial, and I'm very thankful for this because they prepared me for college. Anyway, I got a baseball scholarship to Pepperdine, like I mentioned. And when I went there, of course, it was sort of like culture shock, but I did not face any overt racism. Now, there were other kids that said that they had problems, not many. But none of the athletes were mistreated because we didn't have any problems. But what happened when they had this incident, there was one young man who was killed on campus. And that's why they moved Pepperdine to Malibu, because, you know, there was riots. And also, I forgot to mention this, but you were aware of the 1965 Watts riots, which was very, very scary. You know, it was curfew. You know, you remember seeing the National Guard. I know you got Mr. Mays, Mr. Stashy, and Professor. I know you remember this. You see the National Guard out there. But I didn't have any problems. Now, the baseball coach there was very, very helpful. Coach Marks, I mentioned that in the book. He even went out of his way. He told me my freshman, in fact, I'm sorry, let me back up. When I played baseball, varsity my freshman year, I was the only Black on the team. And Coach Marks pulled me to the side and he said, Dale, he said, I'm going to get some more African-Americans to come here, you know, because he wanted me to feel welcome. And hey, he was a man true to his word. So I didn't have any problem with Coach Marks or any of my teammates. Yeah.
But at the same time, the Watts Rebellion, you know, that's what Dwight Taylor in 92, mm-hmm. you know, I was involved in it. But, you know, right in Pepperdine, there was the AAA and the theater down the street on Manchester and Broadway. And mm-hmm. you had the Savoy skating rink somewhere on 77th and Vermont or something. And things, that was a Black community. Mm-hmm. We were predominantly Black. It had changed immensely that area. Mm-hmm. And the Malibu campus, I spoke there to one at Black graduation. Mm-hmm. It's a whole new different atmosphere. Seemed as if they don't have the emphasis on sports like they used to. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you as alumni still deal with them like that.
Well, I went to several baseball games, but I never have actually just sat down and talked to an administration. But I know, hey, there is a different look there simply because of the area. You know, it's much more affluent, you know, which you guys are aware of, you know, and it's very, very expensive. And see, that's another thing that kept many athletes, not just baseball players, I'm talking about athletes in period. I'm talking about baseball, basketball, track, is because they had this so-called hurdle, which was SAT. You know, you had to get a certain amount of numbers so you could get in college. And see, that's another thing that kept many, many Blacks from going to college. You know, not because they were dumb or stupid, it's just because they had not been exposed and or encouraged to pursue a so-called higher education.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
Because I didn't pass the SAT test. I had to get a junior college there. Mm-hmm. You know, from that standpoint. But still, in your book, you discuss a number of issues, you know, how people played a role in your life. What are the things that you think we should take away from the book, some of the major points that you was trying to emphasize?
Well, going back to Little League, I noticed that when I was growing up was that you had a lot of dedicated Black men who were working, and I mentioned this in the book. They would get off from work. Many of them would come straight to the ballpark. I know Mr. Mays can attest to this, and probably Jesse too, a lot of people. And they would come directly to the ballpark, and they were there. They were showing, or they would, I should say, they were reinvesting into the community as far as showing that we care and that, hey, we're going to try to really help you people. So that's one thing that I would like to try to see, that it's important. Once again, if the family unit, the parents or parent, they have to show, they got to show that they care and they got to get involved. When I say get involved in education, you know, get involved in the positive things. Whatever that student wants to do, if it's playing music, if it's being an entertainer, a doctor, a lawyer, whatever they want to do, encourage them. You know, just don't sit back and let them make up their own mind. You know, show that you're interested, show that you want to support them. That's what I wanted to try to convey from my era to this era, because I was talking to one guy and he was saying that kids nowadays, hey, they just don't like us. Okay, like we valued, I think, like so-called, quote, you know, antiques, you know, antique furniture. You know, I'm talking about silverware. Kids nowadays, they could care less about that. It's all about themselves. You know, they don't care. Or I should say, they only care about things that involve them. So I want to try to teach people, try to learn to be kind, treat other people like you want to be treated, help each other. And like I say in my book, and I said to my students all my life and my kids, grandkids, hey, you just want to put on this earth just to breathe up all the goddamn fresh air. You know, the man upstairs put you over here for a reason. You have a gift. Whatever that gift is, use it and share it with people. Because if you don't, you'll lose that gift because you're selfish because you don't want to give it to anybody else.
Well, what about your coaching experience? What was that like?
Coaching really helped me. Coaching was my therapy, as I mentioned in my book. Coaching helped me always stay around the game. Coaching keeps me young. Coaching keeps me active. And I love to see the smile on a kid's face or when that light bulb goes off, you know, when you show them something and they smile. They say, oh, yeah, coach, now I see. Yeah, coach, I understand. To me, that really makes my heart feel good, you know. And I want to see students be successful because I want them to grow up and help others. You know, like I use as an example, when I used to teach school, I say, hey, if I mistreat you or lie to you or either keep you from becoming a better person, I said, you may not hurt me. Hey, you may hurt somebody that I really care for or love. Like I tell them, if I'm driving and I see you in the crosswalk and I'm very rude and I, you know, don't even stop, I said, I may hit you, kill you. I said, you may be in a position later on to be a doctor. Hey, you may wind up saving somebody that I really love. So that's what I try to tell people. You know, learn something positive and pass it on. Don't be selfish.
But, you know, coaching, you coach not only the athlete to be, like you were saying, you coach them to be better people. But what about the difference between being in Linwood and Compton when you started coaching? And was there a change from a lot of, and even at the park, as Mays was talking about, y'all used to play, the shift in immigration? Because from about 1980 to 1992, there was a major population shift in Compton, and the sports began to change to me. Mm-hmm. I mean, you had more Latinos playing baseball, mm-hmm. and less African Americans in sports to a certain degree, except for basketball, like you said. And you did mention Long Beach Poly and the experiences that we had with the great teams that we had. But mm-hmm. what about the shift as a teacher and as an athlete that you noticed? And what do you think was the factors in that?
Okay, when I first started teaching at Compton High School in 1972, as you're aware of, it was predominantly, you know, African-American.
And,
Okay. So anyway, I my arms are always open as far as student athletes. Okay, I really didn't care what color they were, seriously. You know, if you came out, I wanted to help you to become a better baseball and or football and or basketball player. But I did notice that once I started teaching high school, when I first came back, I noticed when I came back, as you see, that there was a lot of drugs, there was a lot of gang activity. And that really, really kind of blew my mind because, you know, when I left Centennial in just that short length of time from, say, 64 to 68 or 71, to me, it was a tremendous shift, you know, from parent involvement, sports in general. And then when I came back, I noticed that, you know, kids had, to me, okay, had this different type of attitude, you know, towards life. And that really, really kind of shocked me. And I had to kind of switch gears and try to, you know, get with the program, so to speak. So I myself, when the Latinos started, African-American population didn't go away. It just shifted from many of the African-Americans stopped playing baseball and started, once again, like you noticed, they started focusing on basketball and football. So you just have to try to teach and work with what you have.
Mm-hmm. And you see, I remember Littleton Patio, Dudos, the Golden Bird, and above all, I remember after the football game, the Gauntlet, getting back, following the bus from the Ramsar to back to Centennial and waiting for the football players. And we'd be lined up and they'd walk through and we'd congratulate them and things of this nature. And did you ever get a sense of community and a sense of unity a spirit, a high school spirit that seemed to be lost today, at especially at Compton and Centennial, and to a Compton High down for the rebuilding, hopefully. But the point is that I felt when I was going there that we were supported by Black businesses that were around us.
Yes.
Burger Bar on Willowbrook.
Mm-hmm.
Golden Bird, Chicken Wing Place, many liquor stores, barber shops, and you know the business of church we had.
Mm-hmm.
But Black people, I remember Shoe Shine, we had wood shop, metal shop, none of that. So you were there in the ship from the emphasis of vocational training and using that as a way to keep people going to school versus now it's all about testing.
Mm-hmm.
How did that affect the athletic aspect, if it did?
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, going back to high school, okay, when we went to high school, it was so much support, as you know. I mean, we at the football game, the basketball game, hey, the stands would be crowded. You know, we had a lot of parent involvement. A lot of parent involvement, which I really, really liked. And I noticed that once I started teaching high school, oh, let me back up. When we used to have PTA, back when we were in school, a lot of parents would come. Now, when I started teaching at Compton High School, I noticed there was a tremendous drop off. I mean, you were lucky if maybe I'd say, okay, when I was teaching world history, U.S. history, and I had five periods, you know, one period, prep period, I was off. Okay, out of five periods, I'd say you may have maybe like six or seven parents come. And that's what I mean, the apathy that has taken over. And certain, not all politicians, but certain politicians use that to the example, I should say to their advantage, they play on the apathy of people of color. Because if they don't show up and if they don't demand certain things, you know, for their children and or the community and their school within, hey, status quo. You know, as compared, say, like the other areas which you're aware of. You know, so that's what I noticed. It's the ability, and to me, everything begins at home. The parent, the home is the foundation. That's the root. You cut the roots, the tree falls.
Mm. That's a good point.
Yeah.
Okay. I see Miss Bunny is on the phone. How you doing?
Hi, Bunny. How you doing?
I'm fine. You guys doing?
Good.
All right, Bunny. We were just talking to Dale. You have any questions or comments?
Well, I have the book, and I'm starting to read, and I'm, you know, I've had other people who are reading. I had one guy, Claude Ward, from who went to LA High School with me, who said he read it and it was good, and he could see names that he knew from back in the day. So that's what I'm going through now, trying to recognize people that I know. I love the book, and I encourage everyone to get it. I went to Willowbrook Elementary, Carver Elementary, went to Willowbrook Junior High School just in the seventh grade, and then I transferred to went to LA High School. But I still keep in touch with a lot of people from Centennial High School. Some of my best friends are from those schools. So I understand, but I'm really happy that Dale has written this book, because it brings back memories. And hopefully it will make some of our kids interested in baseball again. My son was in T-ball at Ladera Little League, but as soon as he was big enough, he went over to basketball. So
there you go. That's it.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. In fact, he used to have his uniform on, his T-ball uniform. No, his basketball uniform on and the T-ball uniform on top of it. And when he finished that, we'd jump in the car and he'd take his T-ball uniform on, and then we go to basketball. So I really don't, well, you know, I don't know any little kids anymore. My grandson is 11 in the 11th grade, and he's 6'6". He looks like Dale's child. He looks more like Dale's child than he looks like his daddy's child. And he's playing basketball himself. So I don't think DJ ever played baseball, but you know, I know how intense Dale is when it comes to baseball. Yeah. So hopefully he can get some other kids involved.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
So anybody else have any comments? Brother Mays, you have anything you want to bring up? Because you was one of the real. You know, you talked about playing baseball in the community too.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I was just listening to Dale, and he brought out a very good point about the family being the key to this whole success, especially in our community nowadays. Once the family structure starts going down and breaking apart, mm-hmm. that just breaks up the whole family. I remember my father, he would always say, in our household, he said, when we stop eating together as a family, mm-hmm. that's when the family seemed like it started breaking apart. Everybody went on their certain ways. And mm-hmm. and even though we had family structure earlier and that helped, but the key is holding the family together. And that's what's missing in the Black community now. If we could just get that wrapped it into our heads and just realize how important that family structure is. It would to me just bring the Black community together as a whole, because we're definitely in need of that family structure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of that do because most of us came up in two-parent homes.
Yeah, that's true.
And most of us came at where it's like close to, and maybe Brother Hembrick could say this, he knows the statistics, and Rasha Key. Right now, 70 or maybe even more percent of the kids that go to school, high school now, are from placement homes, mm-hmm. and are either from extended family homes. Not that extended family, we didn't have some that had some, a percentage that had some. Then you have the homeless situation where kids are coming from homeless camps, living in trailers, going to school. So, Joe, did you have any comment about the family structure?
Yeah, well, as you know, most of you know, I worked at Centennial off and on for like 20 years. And I did a study in 1994 when I was working on my master's. And at that time at Centennial, 74% of the African-American kids were not living with either parent. Mm. They were in group homes, foster homes, living with grandma, grandpa. Some of the girls were living with boyfriends and stuff like that. And that's one of the things that attracted me to Centennial from Linwood, because, you know, Linwood, most of the kids had parents in the home and whatnot. And I listened to a radio show. They used to have a African Mental Liberation Weekend, the first weekend of Black History Month. It was put on by Kwaku Person Lynn out of Dominguez, Cal State Dominguez Hills. And I heard this girl on there, you know, phoned into the show saying that, you know, they didn't have any teachers over there that would teach them anything. They need help. Can somebody please come help us? So I had recently been relieved from my coaching duties at Linwood, being the first Black head coach in the history of the school. Mm-hmm. I answered that call at Centennial. I took a pay cut. Matter of fact, Dale, I think I met you in 85. It was 1 year that I coached at Compton College. I believe that's when I met you over there in 85.
Yeah.
I was with football with Perkins.
Yes.
So anyway, I went to Centennial, took a pay cut. It was a lot of hard work, but you know, I got in the business to help my people. I remember when I was leaving Linwood and I was meeting with the superintendent, named Audrey Clark at the time. And she was like, Joe, are you sure you want to go over there with them people?
Mm-hmm.
I said, Dr. Clark, I said, I know they're crazy, but they're my people. And I got in the business to help my people.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time in Linwood, the kids over there used to like, kind of like turn up their nose. You mentioned something about Compton. And I told them, where do you think you guys' parents came from? That's where they came from, Compton. And when we were kids, we couldn't go past Alameda back in the day.
That's right.
You know what I'm saying? So it was a lot of hard work at Centennial, but I loved every minute of it. I was just up there the other day, and I didn't hardly see any Black kids. Mm-hmm. I was shocked. I was like, man, it's even worse than it was when I left. And I left there in like 2013, I believe,
mm-hmm.
over to Davis. But the thing is, another thing that's happening in Compton that's very detrimental as far as the school district is concerned, the powers that be are putting people in positions of authority that have no vested interest in Compton. They're not from Compton.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know some of them, you know, some of them drive, over counties to get to Compton. Because they're running their own show, kind of doing what they want to do, especially with budgeting and, you know, these repairs they're supposed to make on these campuses and whatnot. And anybody around that's from Compton that know how stuff should be, they were funneling us out the door so they could do their own thing, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And that's a big problem also. Mm-hmm. Along with the kid, but a lot of the kids that would normally be going to Centennial are at not just Centennial, but Dominguez and Compton, they're going to the charter schools in the Compton area now.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they're doing. Mm-hmm. Because the campuses, to a large degree, are not safe like they were. I know, you know, I, 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 ooh, trying to hold down Centennial all that time I did, but you know, I did a pretty good job. Students used to tell me all the time that they were glad I was there because they feel safe going to school. Mm-hmm. I dealt with all the gangbangers from projects and all the West Side and all around there trying to keep peace so that, you know, students that did well in school want to go there. But even with that, once I got to school early in the morning, I see kids on the bus stop, you know, catching buses to go to other districts to go to school. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember when I got to Centennial as a football coach, I saw this kid and I was trying to get him to, he had transferred to Dorsey. And I was trying to get him to come back. He like, "Coach, I wish you much luck." He said, "I seen 18 of my friends get killed around here. Mm-hmm. I can't come back." I said, "Young man, I totally understand. Much luck to you." Mm-hmm. So, I invested a lot of time in it, and I went to Compton High myself, but my Centennial students always tell me, they say, "You ain't no Tar Heel, you an Apache." Yeah. I think about it. So I only spent 3 years at Compton High, but I've been over here for about 20, so I say you might be right. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I loved it, and I wish we can revive it, all of these athletes out here. Because those kids are in those settings and getting pimped by those foster parents to a large degree, mm-hmm. outside finances and support needs to come because they don't have that family structure support, you know, in these homes, you know, because a large degree, they just pimp them for them checks to, you know, for the most part. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what it's going to take, but we had a meeting yesterday. But it was primarily concerned about West Park and baseball, centered around Bob Davis, mm-hmm. Trying to, you know, get the diamond named after him. And they have a target date of next May, where they plan to have a big festival up at West Park, which is, you know, because baseball was there for a long time. And that's mm-hmm. when Bob Davis started the Pop Warner football on that side of town. Mm-hmm. So would love for, you know, anybody listening in this panel here, you know, that might want to get involved in that to help, you know, folks get that thing off the ground so we can have a nice affair and then hopefully, you know, try to revive baseball in the Compton area.
And Dale, when we was coming up, I think you remember Coach Peter Simon.
Yeah, Simon Peters.
Yeah, Simon Peters and also Coach Lowe. They were very instrumental. And at Mona Park, we had Jim Newman, mm-hmm. we had Bo Walker. We had brothers that was their part-time job or either second job to come and open up the park. But they knew the community. And they, you know, you could go there and you could play sports. And the brothers that were into lumping wouldn't mess with you. If you played sports, you know, if you came there to play sports. Now, if you came there to drink Silver Satin and Kool-Aid and in the park, they may say where you from. But other than that, if you sports was something that people would say, "Oh, he's an athlete," you know, and give you a pass. He's been coming home from Woodbury. Yeah, Woodbury. What about that experience with the coaches? Peter Simon, them at Cressy Park, and Simon Peters and even George McCorn is at Cressy Park.
Okay, let me start. You remember Boyd Bowie, the one-on-one wonder? You remember him?
Yeah.
You're on mute, Dale.
Can't hear you.
You're on mute.
Not on mute. I don't know. Sound just disappeared.
My sound?
Oh, he's back. You're back.
You're back. Go ahead.
Okay now?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. Now, do you remember Boyd Bowie, the one-arm wonder, the basketball player? He's played for the Globetrotters?
Yeah.
Okay. And of course, you know, Mr. Newman was a household word in Compton with basketball. You know that. Jesse knows that. George McCorn. Now, as far as Cressy Park, and I always say this, I say this in my book, if you could play baseball, that's where you went to show how good you were or how bad you were. Two things, either you showed up and you did your job, or if not, you'd get your hat blocked. back in the old days, had blood. That means you get embarrassed, you know. So that was the place to go to play. Now, Mr. Simon Peters, he won a CONEMAC World Series. Great coach. Hot Rod Johnson was there. Mr. Seiler. And I missed this in my book. You guys probably read it. Mr. Seiler was responsible for creating Compton County Mac. And I talked to Deborah and Michael, and this is in my book, his children. They told me the reason why Mr. and Mrs. Seiler built Cressy Park was because the whites wouldn't let them play. So that's it. It's more or less just like the old Negro leagues, you know, like the so-called old, good old boy network. The major leagues wouldn't let the blacks play. So that's why they created the old Negro League. And that's the same reason why Mr. Seiler created Compton County Mac, so the blacks would have a place to play. And like I say, Mr. Owens was there. I'm talking about Mr. Zeely Butts. I mean, there's just so many prominent men that I really, really respect. And even the women, Mrs. Peters was there, Mrs. Johnson. I mean, it was just so many people. Mr. Wilson, Don Wilson's father was there. Mr. Clark, Big Daddy Clark. I mean, it's just so many people that gave their time and they came there. And man, if you came there, that was sort of like a sanctuary. Like you mentioned gangs, we had people, LA High, Fremont, Locke, Dorsey, Harbor City, you had Narbonne, you had San Pedro, you had Inglewood, we had Southgate. It's in the book. At least 25, 30 different cities would come there, because they would come there because that's where the competition was. And when you came there, Compton would come there, Centennial, Dominion, you know, they had their different, you know, their organizations, different colors. But once you came there, that was like a safe haven. There was no disrespect. There was no cussing, no shooting. And that's why one of the things I'll always admire about Cressy Park, because it gave you a place to play. That was our major league stadium, Cressy Park.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
All right, then. Anybody else have any comments before we close out?
One little quick comment, Daryl. You know, all these years I was calling Mr. Seiler. I never knew it was Seiler. I always called him Mr. Silas.
Yeah,
until I read your book.
Seiler, yeah. That's it.
Until I read your book, I realized I was pronouncing, I was calling him Coach Silas all my life and still calling him that until I read your book. And I was wondering, was that a misprint or what? But I see you still saying it, so I guess it was me the one making the mistake.
Yeah. I mean, there were great people back in the, I mean, I'm sure there are good people now, but I'm talking, it was more black men. And that's what I really, really make me proud to see. And I hopefully we'll be able to see that within the not too distant future. If not, we just got to do the best we can.
All right.
What about you, Jess? Any more closing comments, Jess? You're on mute.
Professor Rye, I had to put him on mute because it was a feedback, too much feedback.
Okay, go ahead, Jeff. Take him off.
I don't even know if he's able to come off. He had to go out and come back in again.
You had to go out and come back in. All right. What about you, Bunny? Any closing comments?
I'm smiling because you mentioned Mona Park, and my mom taught at Mona Park Elementary for 25 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that brought back memories. But I wanted to really say that, you know, teachers have to get involved too.
Yes.
You know, I'm a retired educator. My first 3 years I taught at Bethune Middle School. And I have kids who found me on Facebook and have just, you know, praised me for making them understand that as Black students, as Black children, that they were valuable, that they were equal. In fact, I'm going to say a poem at one of my students' wedding on Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
So, but I just wanted to say that my students are 50 years old now, but I still hear from them and I still, get thank yous about Bethune Middle School. And, you know, Bethune wasn't Beverly Hills High School. So I just want to say that we really need to get on teachers and have them do something for our kids. You know, they can, even if the kids don't have it at home, they can come to school and get something.
Mm-hmm. Where is Bethune at?
69th and Broadway.
69th and Broadway. All right. That's our Ball City right there.
Yeah. Now, Rob, yes. I was keeping quiet, but Miss Bunny had mentioned about teacher involvement. And what I've experienced lately is the school usually would be a place if students didn't have structure at the house, at least they can come to school and get some type of structure.
Right.
Now, if you guys came and visited some of these schools nowadays, you would see that the structure is more towards what Professor Ra had mentioned earlier. They are concerned mainly with students doing these district or the standardized testing. Mm-hmm. And that's like the most important thing at the moment. And then when it comes to school structure, we have, you should see how the students act in front of adults. And I don't like talking about myself, but I would say I'm one of the few teachers that would stop in the hallway and let the students know, you can't talk that way in front of me. One reason why is because I don't talk that way in front of you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's inappropriate. And I might be most hated or whatever, but the school structure, and Ms. Bunny, you said something very important. Teachers have to get involved. Mm-hmm. And I agree with you. And we do have good teachers at Centennial. I think I want to push the blame towards the district office and the local administrators, because teachers want things to be better, but it's tough. The dynamics have really changed. And also, the community should take some time out and, you know, come and visit now that the pandemic has eased up, and start putting a little pressure on these schools and the district to do things that makes sense versus not making sense. Because that's what I deal with. I have about 5 more years left. And and I'm gonna do my best as I move on.
Yeah.
You know, I see, because I'm one of the guys that came from Professor Rock, Coach Campbell's. I'm in their camp coming from Compton High School in Long Beach State. So I didn't have that sacred teachings.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm giving it, I'm doing my best, but we need a whole lot of help.
Yeah.
We really do.
Mm-hmm.
So I appreciate what's been said. I really do, and this is awesome.
Thank you.
Okay,
thank
Professor you. Rock.
Jess, can we hear you now?
I think so. Can you hear me?
Right, yeah, we can.
Yeah, the only thing I was going to say is how much I learned, and I wanted to, again, thank Dale for bringing me back home. Because I live a long ways away from Compton now, and I don't get a chance to see and talk to many people like I used to. And it gets lonely up here sometimes. I live in Northern California. I'm about 45 miles north of the Golden Gate.
Yeah.
And in wine country. So I'm a long ways away. But I come to Compton as often as I can, mostly to visit my mother and to see Dale and the rest of my family. Mm-hmm. And so, Dale, thank you for putting this together, man, because it really brought back some memories for me.
Okay.
And also listening to some of the comments that everybody else is making about our community and the schools that we have right now. You know, I really have learned something, because I've not heard some of that from a long, long time. Because most of the time, the people I talk to, when I tell them I'm from Compton, their whole conversation changes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the whole thing changes. Mm-hmm. And I have to explain to these people that Compton is not what you think it is. I say, you read, or you watch too much TV, because mm-hmm. that's not how we live. what's in their mind. So again, thank you for bringing that back and some of the comments that are made that I won't forget. Thanks, Dale, and everyone else.
What about you, Mae? Do you have any closing comments?
Well, I'm good. Thank you very much for put this on, my man.
Okay, I just want to say this, Dale.
Yeah.
The schools have changed. I've taught from elementary all the way up to university. They changed there too. Mm-hmm. But when we was at Centennial, we had maybe 20 clubs.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We had Mr. Freeman. We had the band. We had Spanish club, science club. We had a club that organized students. Mm-hmm. Tomahawks. Mm-hmm. I mean, we had, and people went to those meetings. The Letterman. Mm-hmm. All of those were organizations that organized students and things of this nature. Second, we did have vocational things of interest, electronics, wood shop, you make a lamp, you make a shoe shine box, you make a wood shop, you know, we had metal shop, you know, we had all those things. And that kept students wanting to come to school and be a participant. Because everybody, only about 3% of us played sports. When we went to school, the graduation was between, and in 66, I think we had close to, they said something like 8 to 1,200 students that graduated our senior class. Now, you're lucky if you have 60 students graduate.
Mm-hmm. Really?
In high school. We you know, it's a different game. Now, they're going to go to the prom. And they're going to senior night. But they ain't coming to study. So there's a difference. Well, there's a big difference.
Let me just say this, Professor Ra.
Yeah.
We have 900 and some total students at Centennial right now.
Wow, is that right?
That's it.
900?
About 900 students.
Well, all they have to do is bring back the glazed donuts in the morning.
And the orange juice. It's snack time. That's right. The orange juice. And it's the Dodge juice. Yeah, that's it. Oh, that was good.
Those were the days when you know, you'd be sharp and a seagull. Boo boo on you, you know? But hey, those were days when teachers got to school early and left late. Now teachers leave before the students. The absentee of teachers is just as high as the students. Subs, they running out of subs because teachers being burned out under the stress and the condition. And a lot of it's because the PE department, that where you found your talent. And your coaching and your physical fitness, we used to take showers. They can't even take showers. It's not even mandatory anymore.
That's right.
But they're mandatory PE. No hot water. That's how we learn how to shower and wash our genitals and do all that. Those days are gone, brother. We learned that in junior high. You know, take care of the family jewels that was the PE teacher. And all of those type of things. That, you know, and watch you shower and make sure you lather it out and wash up. Things have changed immensely. But still, there's a lot of progress among some students. That I just spoke at a program this past Sunday, a Kappa League for youngsters who were going to go to college and become Kappas. I mean, it was about 60 kids. 3.0, they had to have a 3.0 or 4 to be a part of the organization. It was just good to see that in spite of the challenges we face, there are some kids at the Black colleges, at some schools, that are doing excellent. And we got to put more time into them as much as we criticize the negative. Mm-hmm. So Dale, I want to tell you this, unless if you don't have any more closing comments, we thank you for coming on and sharing your wealth of knowledge with us about the the wholesomeness and the beauty of your book, as well as your personal experience by way of your biography, coming up in Watts and then Compton and being successful, winning scholarships like you and Jesse and my brother Mays becoming a contractor and working and things of this nature. There's a lot of people that made it, and we still here and we blessed to still be here because we either going to a funeral or coming from one at our age. And I know that we had to deal with Robert Wallace, Percy Woods, the Long, not Raymond, but the Longs and the Allens and all of that.
Yeah.
But they were families. Now you got outside people because gangs are more mobile and violence is mobile. We didn't have to worry about drive-bys. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe a bumper jack going by your head, mm-hmm. but not shooting each other and things. And we went from the chest and we settled it. Mm-hmm. It was a fight, it was over. Next thing you know, the two people fighting best friend.
Yep.
And that's how things were. So things have changed, but at the same time, we praise those that are doing good. And again, this is an excellent book, as Bonnie says. And I posted it on my Facebook, and that's why I wanted you on here so that people can get it. This will be on YouTube, Dale. Okay. And you can recommend people that didn't get a chance to get it. Brother Rashiki will tell you how you can gear people to it. So Rashiki, tell them what's coming up this Wednesday and close us out.
All right. I want to thank everybody for coming this evening. It was excellent to hear this very rich and significant history. I really appreciate it. All right, let's take a look at what's coming up for the rest of the week. Okay, on Wednesday, we have Alexis Kelly and Charlene Castle. They're going to discuss homelessness and mental health / substance use. And then we have a special show. We usually don't have shows on Thursday, but I was able to get a young lady that's from the United States and in the LA area. Her name is Priestess Victorious, and she now resides in Ghana. So that's going to be very interesting. I have some questions for her. We're going to get information about Ghana and the things that she's doing there. So very, very excited about that. This will be our first international show. So those are the two things that are coming up the rest of the week. And Professor Ra, who we got next week?
Well, I'll call you and let you know. As I usually do.
Okay, well, I'm going to say
sometimes we have community forums where we may be discussing abortion and the concept of that new law in New York that you can carry a concealed weapon. So we might discuss that this next Monday. But then again, we may have somebody else. I'm thinking about calling Jesse and getting him on to talk about Blacks in corporate America and the business world and see if he'll do that for us. So that might be our next move. All right.
Okay, well.
Hold up a second, fellas. I was dealing with this with this roofer. I was off the air for a minute. But I just like to say in closing, we need to have a moment of silence for Brother Marlon Briscoe, who used to be called Marlon the Magician, was probably the first Black quarterback in NFL in modern times. He was a receiver with the Denver Broncos, and the quarterback got hurt, and he had been a quarterback in college. So they put him in there. I don't know if you guys remember that, brother. Marlon Briscoe. I think he was from the South Central Watts area. But anyway, he just passed yesterday.
Okay. So may the good he brought in the world last forever, may none be long. May he rise then to the Most High and said to circle of the ancestors. And may none of the love that he brought in the world be lost, and may he have a powerful presence in heaven, a glorious spirit in heaven, and a powerful presence on earth, and be remembered for all the good and beauty he brought in the world. All right. Ashe, Petty, Hotep.
Sante Sana for that, Professor Rock. Yeah. Okay. Well, we're going to say each one teach one in Conscious Corner. Everybody have a good evening.
All right, then. And Brother Mays.